July the 11th, 15 years ago. But the incidents leading up to it can be briefly explained, perhaps just for people who don't remember what it was about. The land where Ganasatagi is located is not a reserve, and I think there was a misconception during the Oka crisis that this was occurring on a reserve that was, you know, a Mohawk reserve. But this land was actually still in dispute, and I believe this is an ongoing problem. And on this land was located a 9-hole golf course, and certain people wished to expand it to an 18-hole golf course. And two of the people that, as it turned out, were major shareholders, one of them happened to be the mayor of Oka at that time, and another person who was a major shareholder, from what I understand, was the former head of the SQ who had retired that year. And these two people were, we're friends, right? Now, they were renting the initial land for this 9-hole golf course for a ridiculously low sum of money, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was something ridiculous, like $80 or something. It was something very minimal. And so I think what their notion was to expand it under the same conditions rather than have to pay market prices for, adjacent land, which I believe was also for sale at that time, but they didn't want to deal with that, so they decided instead we're going to expropriate this other land that was still in dispute. And the Mohawks, of course, were not happy with this, with their intention. So they decided to block the expansion, and they did it in a way that disturbed some people. they basically took up arms and blocked this small entrance road to the golf course, and they had been in place, I believe, for I don't know the exact details. I'd have to look it up, but for maybe a few weeks at this point, and people were getting kind of disturbed that they couldn't use their golf course. So somebody decided to take action. Now, the funny part is that nobody seems to know who actually called in the SQ on the 11th, but there are some theories considering who were the major shareholders of this enterprise, right?
Right.
I still find it remarkable that this hasn't been cleared up. But early morning on the 11th, they sent in the troops, the SQ, and it turned into something out of some sort of comedy routine, I suppose, in a sense. People were running about not knowing what was going on. They threw smoke bombs that blew back in the face of the SQ and caused great confusion. At some point, they had also placed in position snipers in the trees. And one of these snipers was a person called LeMay, who ended up falling out of the tree, and he'd been shot and he was killed. And the Mohawks were blamed by the SQ. They claimed that that they had, shot their man. But there was actually no proof as to what had actually occurred. But this is basically what escalated the incident. And during the invasion that morning, which had quite infuriated a lot of people, because there had been, from what I recall, there had been some sort of purification ceremony going on at that time, and there were women and children present when the SQ had attacked this this protest. There was a great deal of anger that the SQ had invaded in this manner, and they were forced into a retreat, and they left behind their police vehicles, which were hastily formed into a barricade, which became the barricade at the top of the hill that people know. This was a main road now that was being blocked, rather than just a small road going into the golf course. Well, there was a great deal of criticism in terms of the way the SQ had handled this incident, the way it had escalated. And at one point, I think the government was really worried that there were going to be further deaths involved in this incident. So they called in the army to take over, the position of the SQ. And it was at this point that I actually became involved as a photographer. The army was already in position. And the SQ was still there, but they'd been delegated a lesser, you know, just a lesser role, and the Army was keeping a watch on them to make sure that they didn't get out of control. So there'd been allegations of torture as well by some of the Mohawks in the community that they had. I remember an allegation that somebody claimed that they were taken into some sort of barn and tortured with cigarette butts. And, you know, I don't know if any of that ever got substantiated. But somehow one didn't really doubt that there might be some truth to some of these allegations, because I personally know a photographer that was also working with us at the film festival, and he'd been present the day that LeMay had been shot with other journalists. You know, he was present with other journalists photographing you know, the incident.
Yes.
And what had happened to him was that that later that day he'd been in a car with several other reporters, some video you know, like television reporters.
Yes.
And he is a photographer, and they had seen the, some SQ cars taking off at great speed down the road and decided something was happening, and had given chase in a sense, like to, you know, to try
follow
to keep
them.
Up with them.
Yeah.
To follow them, and they'd found themselves cut off in the front and behind by the SQ, who had proceeded to shoot out their tires, haul them out of the car, put guns to their head. Am I allowed to swear?
Yes, you can.
Okay, all right. they said, you know, I got this from my friend who was involved in this. You know, the guns were put to their head, and they said, move and we'll blow your fucking head off. And they proceeded to go through the vehicle and destroy all of their film, all of the video footage that they had made that morning on the hill, which is very suspicious, I think, you know, because I can understand if they were really adamant that that their man had been taken down by the Mohawks, they might be interested to see the material, but would they destroy it before they saw it? I found that very, very strange, you know.
Very strange.
So some of the things I was hearing were giving me the impression that there was more to the story than was actually you know, coming out in the media. There seemed to be an unwillingness to really delve into some of the suspicious you know. Well, things like this.
Did you feel that's what made you a different independent media?
I thought it. You know, I think that the role of independent media is extremely important in this world where the major news sources are being dominated by just like one particular owner. You know, like we had that with Izzy Asper, who owned several newspapers in Canada, and you know, and there was you know, this Murdoch. You know, it's getting to a point where there's basically they're being dictated to. The what is being said in the newspaper is being dictated to by the owners, and that's why independent media is extremely important, because it allows you know, just an independent voice,
and
right?
To see other sides, yeah, of the story, and maybe more pieces of what's happening rather than seeing one side.
Yeah.
Canadian Army take that was perhaps not spoken of in the media.
Well, what I can only say what I saw. I mean, it was interesting. It was very fortunate timing, if you want to call it that, because I did get tear gas. But you know, we basically immediately ran onto the bridge and went to the foot of the bridge where the Army were. You know, dispatching their men dressed in, like, you know, in gas masks with guns and creating panic amongst people who were stuck on the bridge. I mean, people had gone there. They, you know, there was a lot of women and children in that vicinity and on the bridge, and people, you know, and older people who couldn't believe that their community was being attacked. And, you know, some people, when the tear gassing began, were so overwhelmed by the tear gas that I think an older woman fell off the bridge and was injured, you know?
Yes.
People fell into the water, and so this was all going on when I arrived, and you know, I saw the Army guys. You know, I have a photograph of them gun butting a Mohawk in the back, you know, holding him down and hitting him with the butt of his gun, which I don't believe is proper practice.
No.
You know, anyway, and it was very, very emotional, and you know, I did actually, you know, I did. try to bring down the tension to some degree, because, you know, like just telling people to calm down, you know, not that anyone's going to listen to me, but, you know, I mean, people were starting to pick up rocks and, you know, it was really dangerous. And just the army, for some inexplicable reason, they did give a reason, but it wasn't a very good one, just like, you know, dropping their men down into an unarmed community and attacking it.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. It was unbelievable. And you know, supposedly the reason they gave afterwards was that they believed that there was ammunition that was being stored in the clubhouse, but they never got anything. All they found was maybe a gun and another gun that was in pieces. I don't even think it was like put together. And this is actually quite normal for a community that does hunt to have a gun in a clubhouse. I mean, this isn't abnormal. They certainly didn't find a store of guns, and they also were seen taking off a case of beer. So I don't know if this whole very expensive
story,
you know, thing, you know, was over what one gun and a case of beer.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, you know, they were claiming that this was like, you know, that this was a terrorist stronghold or something, and basically it was just a bunch of people that lived in the community that were just incredulous this was happening.
Yes.
And you know, but because I was there totally by accident, I happened to be one of only two media that were in the spot. There was another guy who was from one of the television stations that just happened to also by accident be there as well. I was alone on the bridge at one point. I was the only person who was not an Aboriginal, and I didn't really see that I looked so different, but obviously everybody else knew that I wasn't.
You had mentioned that they were telling you to tell your people,
look
what you're doing to us. And how did you feel about that?
What happened was, at one point when I was on the bridge, and you know, you've got like, you know, gun-butting men that look like insects, like emerging from tear gas, hurting people. And, you know, and on the other hand, you know, there's me on the bridge, and I'm the only person who's at hand who supposedly belongs to this group. I don't know how. But anyway, I got surrounded by a bunch of women, and they were really, I mean, understandably frantic and upset.
Yes.
But they started screaming at me, "You go back to your people and you tell them, you show them what they're doing to us," right?
Right.
Which I fully intended to do. But my absolutely impulsive response was, at that time when I said it, I was looking over at these people who really did look like ants invading. And I just said, "These aren't my people. My people wouldn't do something like this." And I meant it.
And when the journalists were invited to cross the army line,
oh yeah, that happened a little later.
Yeah, afterwards, what did they tell you? Did they advise you to do anything? Did they ask you for information, or?
Yeah, well, what happened was this took place over a period of maybe another couple of hours, right?
Okay.
So what happened was the regular media heard what was happening, and then they started to arrive, right? There was like a little island across the bridge. There was like a little island, and people started to gather there, and the army started to sort of build like lines of defense.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
And they were in formation, and so there was a standoff between the people and the army at this point, and their leaders, the Mohawk leaders, tried to bring down the tension, and they took a piece of white string and they placed it in between the army and the people,
mm-hmm.
you know, which was a mixture of men and women, ordinary people.
Yes.
Right? And this is a reserve, Ganawagi. And the media had arrived en masse, and at one point they offered us this possibility to have an interview with their commander. Of course, you know, which any normal media person would agree to. So they asked us to please step across the line, and instead of discussing it right at that place, they started drawing us further and further away from the line of conflict, and some of us suddenly looked at each other and said, "No,
mm-hmm.
no, we were basically being tricked."
Yes.
Right?
To not get
because and it was such a volatile situation. I was really afraid for the people that there was going to be bloodshed, you know. And the media, I'd already realized, having been behind the barricade at Oka, that the media was providing this buffer zone between the army and the Mohawks. Because, you know, there were more of us than the Mohawks. I mean, there were only, like, maybe 32 or 34 Mohawk warriors at the most, right?
Yes.
You know, and but there were easily 200 journalists there at any given point. And we were getting in their line of their vantage point in terms of, the line of firing, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And
line of firing.
Yeah, and they knew it. And we knew it. I mean, not everybody, of course, took on that role willingly. But, I mean, actually, I knew that we were there. And we were there for a good reason, in a sense, right? You know, so that was interesting. Because what happened then was I and another photographer, we just turned around and we started to walk back. The other guys kept going. Some of the other journalists just kept going for this great meeting they were going to have with the commander. And we just said no. And we turned around. And when we turned around, obviously some of the army guys weren't happy with our decision, and they said, "Where are you going?" We said, "We're going back." And we were looking at them very skeptically, and they said, and this one said to me, he said, "Better keep your head up, dear.